The holidays bring families together. That's a good thing, but sometimes you can have too much of a good thing. Today we're going to talk about navigating some of the difficult parts of family togetherness. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we'll celebrate the holidays' dysfunctional family style. And really, all families have at least a little dysfunction. I'll talk with family therapist Jacob Priest, psychiatrist Dr. Lauren Olson, and addictions counselor Steve Steiny. We'll talk about some of the challenges families face during the holiday season and get a lot of advice for how to get through. We also want to hear your stories this hour. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. There are many traditions associated with celebrating the holidays, but for most of us, the most important tradition is spending time with family, traveling, cooking, buying presents, and then packing someone's house with many members of a family can bring about a great deal of stress. Now, of course, that's been the humorous idea behind many of our favorite holiday movies, including this one, Christmas Vacation.
Where do you think you're going? Nobody's leaving. Nobody's walking out on this fun old-fashioned family Christmas. No, no, we're all in this together. This is a full-blown four-alarm holiday emergency here. We're going to press on, and we're going to have the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap danced with Danny F.K. And when Santa squeezes his fat white down that chimney tonight, he's going to find the jolliest bunch of this side of the nut house.
You're goofy.
Don't piss me off, Art.
Clark, it's over.
Not according to Santa's watch, it isn't.
Now, come on, son.
Stay out of this, Dad.
Clark, I think it's best if everyone just goes home. Before things get worse.
Worse? How could they get any worse? Take a look around you, Ellen. We're at the threshold of hell.
All right, so that's the Griswold family celebrating the holidays together. And families usually don't get quite that bombastic during the holiday season, but there can be a lot of challenges. And this hour, we're going to talk about navigating some of the challenges of spending time with family over the holidays. We also want to hear from you this story. Share your stories and ask your questions if you have difficult family situations that you need to get through this holiday season. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Dr. Lauren Olson. He's a psychiatrist at United Community Services in Des Moines. Hello, Lauren.
Hi, it's good to be back and talk with you again.
Yes, Jared. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Jacob Priest is also here. He's a visiting assistant professor in the Couple and Family Therapy Program at the University of Iowa. Jacob, thank you for being here today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
And Lauren, I want to start with you. And I know one of the things that sets us up for a lot of stress in the holiday season are our expectations. What kinds of problems can we set ourselves up for?
Well, I think one of the things, Charity, is that the bar is often set way too high. We expect to have a Christmas as it's represented in the media and on TV in these wonderful commercials. The standard is often perfection. And there are very, very few times when it's worth putting the effort into something that's perfect. And the standard really ought to be good enough. You know, we're not going to be perfect all the time.
And we have these ideas that our homes need to look beautiful and be perfect. The food creates expectations and a great deal of stress.
Yeah,
and then the presents as well. We have to pick out just the right thing to create some holiday magic and lasting memories.
But so much of that is based on our own need for approval from other people. We decorate. I remember when I was first divorced, and as a part of the divorce, I kind of lost custody of all the Christmas tree ornaments. And the first year put up a Christmas tree that had just crystal balls and lights on it, and we had some people over, and they said, well, when are you going to finish decorating your tree? Well, for us, it was done. You know, it was all we wanted. And initially, my response was to be feeling disappointed. But then I thought, well, this is what I wanted. You know, this is all I wanted. And if your self-esteem is caught up in you're always looking for that positive feedback from another person to feel good about yourself, and it never works. You know, you have to please yourself in what you're doing.
Well, Jacob, do you have anything you want to add about how we set ourselves up with these overly high expectations?
Yeah, I think that kind of going along with what's been said, we have this underlying need to have connection. And I think the holiday time really brings that out in people. And even though we have this need for connection, at the same time, we also want to be autonomous. We want to do our own thing. And so when those two things are competing against each other, we tend to feel stress. And when we feel stress, we tend to react in probably not the best ways. And so that can lead us to do things that can cause more conflict and more stress and not necessarily get our needs met, but on the other hand, just create more problems. And so I think that with those outside expectations that the holidays bring, it can be a time where people have this expectation of having a real strong connection. And when that need's not met, they can react and try to get that connection and end up being more frustrated and more angry, like the clip we just listened to. You know, right. The Griswolds, I want this to be perfect. I want this to be great. Underneath that is that sense for connection, for togetherness. And when that doesn't happen, people can get really frustrated.
Well, and when you know that you're going to be spending time with your entire family, and many of us will be celebrating, for example, Christmas three, maybe four, maybe five different times in the coming weeks because families are complicated. We all have two sides of the family to start with, and many of us have even more than that. Jacob, do you recommend thinking about, okay, here are people in the family that I sometimes have a difficult time with. I need to think about how I'm going to manage that relationship.
I think that's a really important strategy. Before going into the holiday season, I think it might be important to sit down with those people who are close to you or kind of plan out what's going to be going on in the holiday season and talk about, okay, what are these expectations? What are the expectations I have? What are the expectations my family has? And how can we navigate that? Is there some things we might want to cut out? Are there certain things that are essential and important to our family and to our traditions that we need to keep? And just being able to navigate what's important, what's not, and be able to have overt, explicit conversations about that so people can understand where everyone's coming from. And so you can avoid this overwhelming sense of frustration that comes from this desire to connect that may or may not get fulfilled.
Well, I will share throughout the hour some stories of my own family dysfunction. But I had a very difficult set of grandparents, and every year we would go celebrate the holidays with them. And unfortunately, in my family, we all understood this difficulty, and we were all in it together, my little nuclear family. But, you know, by the time we were done at Grandma and Grandpa's house every year, my mother was physically ill because of all the stress and difficulty. We all knew that was going to happen going into it, and we always took a little time to recover. Afterward, we knew that every year Grandma would take an opportunity to give my dad a present that telegraphed to him how she really didn't like that he was her son-in-law. And again, we all knew that that was going to happen. But is a sense of humor and a sense of unity important with the people that you do have a good relationship with? Lauren, do you want to add something to that?
Well, yeah. I think families that are dysfunctional all year long are not going to suddenly become functional at Christmas, you know. I think if you know that there's a situation that's going to be difficult, you don't have to spend all day with them. You know, you can drop in and have a cookie with them and then say that you're going on to someplace else. And for some people where the families are so dysfunctional, they create, you know, families of choice, of people that they do care about and know that they're going to be accepting of them. But if it's really difficult, you know, if there's a problem with alcohol, perhaps doing something early in the day before it gets out of control. But I think, you know, we tend to think, as in the clip that you showed, you know, it has to be a whole day of festivities. And it's okay to say, I really need to leave now before it gets out of control.
Well, and not just a whole day of festivities. mean, for a lot of us, you know, we travel a long way to go be with family during the holiday season. So it's not just a day. It's a weekend. It's 3 or 4 days. Right. And you add in the stress of traveling and the expense of traveling in on top of that. I wonder, you know, so many different people have to do things to make a family holiday work. And usually there is a family that's hosting, and there are people in that family who have had to clean and decorate their home who are responsible for all the food. There are the people who are traveling, sometimes traveling with small children, sometimes traveling great distances, sometimes taking time off work without pay to be able to make that happen. Do you recommend sitting down and thinking through, you know, what is everybody doing to make this possible?
I think it's okay to ask for help, for one thing. I mean, you don't have to do it all, and it doesn't have to be complicated in terms of – I think, you know, a lot of times it's the family food preparation is like an event on Chopped on Food Network where, you know, if you don't win, you're going to be sent home. But I think that, you know, again, our expectations are often unrealistic in terms of what we can do.
And Jacob, do you have anything you want to add to that? I mean, I think that it's important to give people credit for what they've done as well.
Yeah, as you were talking, it just kind of sounded exhausting, right? Getting the kids in the car, traveling forever. Wait, why are we doing this? It's kind of this idea of is this even worth it? But I think that what you need to focus on is really creating a game plan of, okay, if we're going to be doing this, let's think through all the possible obstacles that are going to be there. And then at the same time, being able to have flexibility built in, because we'd all like to have the perfect holiday season. We'd all like to be able to go to this house, be there, have a great experience, go to the next house, be there, have the great experience, or stay with family for a week and have a great experience. But that's not always the case. And so it's managing those expectations, creating a game plan to say, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is kind of what the structure is going to look like. And then if it doesn't go that way, being willing to be flexible and adapt the circumstances to the circumstances that may present themselves.
There will always, it seems to me, maybe not in every family, in many families, there is that one person who's going to take way too much responsibility on themselves. How do you figure out if you're not that person? You know, if you're that person, maybe it's time to rethink what you're doing. But if you're not that person, how do you figure out what you can do to make that person feel appreciated and help them even if they don't want help? Lauren?
I don't know that you can force them to help. You know, there are some people who really kind of thrive on that role, but then they often get resentful. You know, here I've gone to all this trouble and no one appreciates what I've done. But there again, what they've done is they've not prepared the food or the party in such a way that they're doing it for themselves. They're looking for feedback and approval from other people, and it just doesn't work. But I think, you know, it's important to ask for help. I mean, somebody, not all the food has to be prepared by one person.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about navigating some of the more difficult parts of families gathering in the holiday season. We'd love to hear from you as well. Call us, share your stories. Some of them are funny, I know. Some of them are not funny at all. Maybe not yet, or maybe not ever. But you can share your stories. You can ask your questions at 866-780-9100. With me this hour, Dr. Lauren Olson, psychiatrist at United Community Services in Des Moines, and Jacob Priest, a visiting assistant professor in the Couple and Family Therapy Program at the University of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa.
Through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh, o'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about navigating some of the difficult things that families face during the holiday season as we all gather together and have very high expectations for a perfect and magical holiday with one another. It's also a time of year when a lot of us feel a lot of pressure to present a perfect front to the world. And that's pressure that Marge Simpson also caved into on the Simpsons holiday episode.
Dear friends of the Simpson family, we had some sadness and some gladness this year. First, the sadness. Our little cat Snowball was unexpectedly run over and went to kitty heaven. But we bought a new little cat, Snowball too. So I guess life goes on. Speaking of life going on, Grandpa is still with us, feisty as ever. Maggie is walking by herself. Lisa got straight A's. And Bart, well, we love Bart. The magic of the season has touched us all.
Marge, haven't you finished that stupid letter yet?
Homer sends his love. Happy holidays.
Marge.
The Simpsons.
Marge.
the holiday letter tradition, Simpsons style. With me this hour, Dr. Lauren Olson. He's a psychiatrist at United Community Services in Des Moines. Jacob Priest is a visiting assistant professor in the Couple and Family Therapy Program at the University of Iowa. And now joining the conversation is Steve Steiny. He's a certified addictions counselor and clinical manager for the outpatient department at MECCA, community-based substance abuse treatment organization. Steve, thank you so much for being here today.
Good morning, and thanks for having me.
Now, for people who struggle with substance abuse issues, what are some of the special challenges that the holiday season presents?
Well, it's a great question, and I think to build on what's already been discussed this morning, I think we have to remember that substance use, whether it's alcohol or other drugs, really can amplify some already underlying family dynamics or just a level of dysfunction. And it can really present additional challenges both for individuals who may be early in their recovery or trying to make some lifestyle changes regarding their alcohol or drug use, and other family members who may be actively using alcohol or other drugs during those family events.
So it can create difficult situations because the substance may be readily available for someone who is trying to recover, is what you're saying?
Yes, and that's something hopefully we'll have a chance to talk about today and perhaps hear from some listeners who may have questions about some strategies to negotiate or work through some of those situations.
Now, we've been talking about families gathering, and of course not all of us have an opportunity to gather with family for whatever reason. Does that also create some opportunities for some real difficulties with substances? Yeah,
certainly, and I can reference many of our clientele that we work with at our clinic often begin talking about some of their thoughts and feelings and challenges. With the holidays coming up, we start talking about those issues with them, early on, even prior to the holidays beginning. So it definitely can be an opportunity or a situation where the individual will either be faced with some issues relating to engaging with a family that may not be healthy. It may be jeopardizing their early recovery commitments, and or they may not have access to what we would consider family, and it may set them up for isolation and really feeling left out and lonely.
Now, as we've been saying, this is a time of year when a lot of us want to present this sort of ideal image of what our family is. Does that lead some people to ignore very serious substance problems during the holiday season and think, well, we'll deal with that in January?
Yeah, so that, again, I think, Charity, there's a wide range of dynamics that can be taking place during a holiday event or gathering. And yes, one of the trends that I was sharing with Jacob prior to the broadcast today was we may have situations where families are really not able to engage with their family members, and it may pose situations where they are really struggling with even engaging with them.
When you are helping people who are trying to recover on the road to recovery and help them try to create a plan to get through the holiday season, what are some of the things, and just in generalities, that you help people plan for?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I often we will talk with our clientele about is really trying to plan ahead and look into the situation prior to attending that event. So they may call the family that the family member that's hosting the gathering, let them know what's happening, let them know that they may have some concerns or some requests to change or accommodate them. That may not always work out. And the other idea would be to, as a couple of as have already been mentioned, is to limit your involvement. Have an opportunity to step out or make a cameo appearance. And then lastly, I think there may be situations where you may really want to you may not be able to or have to make the choice not to attend that family function if it is going to jeopardize your recovery.
I know for a lot of people who are trying to recover from substance abuse, a big stepping stone and a big thing that they need to do is to be honest about their addiction. Is that something else that you try to help people with? Is this a time when they have to share with family what's going on?
Well, not necessarily. I think it really – there's such a broad range of family dynamics and situations that I think, you know, expose that or using the family event as an opportunity to come clean or be open about their early recovery. I don't know that that's necessary. One of the trends that we see, and it's been alluded to already, is we may have situations where it's sort of like the elephant in the room, where family members are not going to address this issue during the holidays. And what we see in the addictions field often is we have a lull in interventions and committals and admissions prior to the holidays, and then once the holidays have passed, we see often see a spike in civil committals, admissions, and interventions that take place.
We're talking this hour about navigating some of the stresses that families face during the holiday season as we gather together and as we celebrate or try to celebrate. With me this hour, Steve Steine. He's a certified addictions counselor and clinical manager for the outpatient department at MECCA, a community-based substance abuse treatment organization. Dr. Lauren Olson is here. He is a psychiatrist at United Community Services in Des Moines. And Jacob Priest, a visiting assistant professor in the Couple and Family Therapy Program at the University of Iowa. We want to hear from you as well. Share your stories. They may help someone else in a similar situation. Or if you have a sticky situation, feel free to ask our experts for a little bit of guidance. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Frank is on the line in Mason City. Hi, Frank.
Hello.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
My stepson is... I sort of have a love-hate relationship with him, and he doesn't come often to the house. But when he does, he wants me to be his father figure sometimes. But then that can pass away, and then when he comes here, he tries to take over and dominate, and especially usurp my authority and my directing of activities. Which I try to stay in the background anyway, but he tries to take over everything, and not to any great degree. But there can be tension, which and it is disturbing to me. It's not a huge problem, but you know, if I could get any advice on how to, and he's only here for maybe 4 or 5 hours on Christmas, Thanksgiving, and Easter, and a couple other times, but he tries to take over and dominate the situation, you know.
Jacob?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that would be important is to engage in a conversation before your stepson gets there. If there's a possibility to maybe sit down and kind of talk with him about your feelings, give him a chance to express how he's feeling and what's going on for him, that gives more of an opportunity that when when things do arise where you feel like he's taking over, that there's kind of this discussion that's already been had that may help facilitate that process a little bit so that nobody feels like they're being pushed out or if somebody's trying to take over. Because I think that a lot of times we think that we have to handle it in the moment. And I think it's better to have time maybe to reflect on it beforehand, to think about possible ways to communicate, to give a chance to listen to your stepson and see where he's coming from, see what emotions and experiences he's having that kind of leads to that stress where maybe he feels like he has to take over. And then at the same time, as we've talked about before, talking about strategies, how to handle it in the moment, of looking at ways that, okay, if this is what we see what happens, do I need to take a step back? Is there something that I could do to help mitigate some of these problems? So I think that it's just about having open conversations beforehand to try to facilitate the best possible experience.
Well, that sounds like some very good advice. Maybe I should try that. It's always, I guess, kind of scary to break that ice to engage in that sort of a conversation, but maybe that's what I need to do. And at a moment when everything is calm and not when he's here, you know. So, you know, I think I'll try to do that.
And I think another important thing whenever you're bringing up important conversation is how the conversation starts can often predict how the conversation is going to end. So it's really important to start soft, to kind of say, hey, these are some things I've noticed. It's really important that I hear from you about this, and not to say, I see that you're doing this and this makes me really upset, but to ease into that conversation and allow space to develop so people can share those emotions and don't feel like they're going to not be listened to or not be heard. So I think that having the conversation beforehand and being really aware of how you're starting that conversation will start it off on the right foot. And then at the same time, don't necessarily feel that you're going to solve all the problems in one conversation. View this as an ongoing conversation that's going to help build your relationship with your stepson.
Is there also an opportunity here for Frank to ask his stepson, you know, is there something that I do that makes you feel like you need to do this?
Yeah, I would think that's a great idea to kind of is there something that's about our relationship or the dynamic that – is there something I do that triggers that in you? And to look and give some space for your stepson to be able to talk about it, because you need to hear where he's coming from and he needs to hear where you're coming from so you guys can connect in a way that's meaningful, that you can say, okay, I understand where you're coming from and I understand that there may be certain things that I do that make you feel – unsafe or uncomfortable. And then there's certain things that you do that may make me feel unsafe or uncomfortable. And to talk about those and to work together to make the best possible experience.
But Frank, I hear you saying you've been scared to start that conversation before, which seems to me like a legitimate fear. And Lauren, do you have anything you want to add? Is this a conversation that needs to happen?
Yeah, I think, you know, if we look at it in very general terms, men tend not to want to sit down and talk. Women are more inclined to sit down and talk. So it may be best to say before the party, let's go bowling and just hang out together. And then in the process of that, talk about it. So he doesn't feel real cornered in the process of that. But it sounds like he's hungry for a relationship for you, and there's still some struggles for control. But sometimes if you just say, let's sit down and talk about it, it can be a little threatening. So you may want to engage in whatever activity that you share and try and bond around some things that you share outside of that time, and then have the discussion as a part of that activity.
Well, and are there resources that Frank can turn to for how to have that conversation? Because as you were saying, Jacob, how you say something is very important at a time like this in with regard to how someone will hear it. Are there places that you think Frank could turn for that kind of guidance?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of resources that are available out there. I know the American Association for Marriage and Family Therapy has a website, amft.org, that has some tools and strategies where people can look about how do you start conversations, how do you navigate those conversations. And I also think that it's going to be about getting to know what's useful for your stepson, of being able, as kind of like Lauren was referring to, know what you like to do together and use that to kind of break the ice. I think that and if that conversation doesn't go well, it may be important to maybe call a therapist or go meet with a therapist and have a discussion where you can actually have an outsider's perspective, where you can talk about, okay, these are some possibilities, these are some other possibilities. And if eventually your stepson would want to come with you and be able to have a place where there's somebody who can help facilitate the discussion, that may be useful going forward.
Frank, do you have any questions you want to ask?
Well, no, it just was kind of coming down to the point where I'm going to have to take him aside and say, look, either you're going to have to change your ways or you're not going to be welcome here. And then that could lead to a punch in the nose or something. But what you've said so far has been very helpful about easing into it and, at a non-threatening time. So I'm really glad that I called and I'll let that digest, and I'll probably have a talk with him then when I feel like there's an opening. Mm-hmm.
Well, and this is also a point where Frank needs to let him know that he does love him and care about him too, right?
Exactly. I think that's what the message has got to start off as I value this relationship, I care about you, and I want to have a relationship with you.
Yeah, one thing is in the past, when he was a little boy, he's like 35 now, but I was drinking a lot, and I treated him pretty mean at times. So he kind of remembers that, I'm sure. And if I just acknowledge those things and say that I'm very sorry that happened, but I'm not the same person anymore, and something along that line, I think that would be very helpful for me to bring up.
Absolutely. I think that's important.
Well, Frank, best of luck to you. Thank you so much for your call. We're talking about navigating some of the more difficult parts of family holidays this hour on Talk of Iowa. With me is Jacob Priest. He's a visiting assistant professor in the Couple and Family Therapy Program at the University of Iowa. Dr. Lauren Olson is a psychiatrist at United Community Services in Des Moines. And Steve Steiny is a certified addictions counselor and clinical manager for the outpatient department at Mecca. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about navigating some of the more stressful parts of families getting together over the holiday season. We have high expectations and a lot of hopes for what our holiday celebrations will be like, and sometimes that can create a great deal of stress for families over the holiday season. We'll continue this conversation in a moment, but let's take a pause to join another family that many of us spend some time with over the holidays. Here's a moment opening some presents in the movie A Christmas Story.
Ralphie, show everybody what Aunt Clara gave you.
Aunt Clara had for years labored under the delusion that I was not only perpetually 4 years old, but also a girl.
She just always gives you the nicest things, Ralphie. Oh, my. Oh, isn't that sweet? Ralph, go upstairs and try it on.
I don't want to.
Go upstairs right now and try on that present. She went to all that trouble to make it. Now go on.
And of course, if you've seen the movie, you know that present was a pink pajama type bunny suit then Ralphie didn't really want for the holidays. With me this hour, I have Dr. Lauren Olson. He's a psychiatrist at United Community Services in Des Moines. Jacob Priest is a visiting assistant professor in the Couple and Family Therapy Program at the University of Iowa. And Steve Steiny is a certified addictions counselor and clinical manager for the outpatient department at Mecca, a community-based substance abuse treatment organization. We'd love to hear from you this hour as well. If you have some situations that are difficult to navigate during the holidays, share your story. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I think we need to talk about, you know, there are families where we're not talking about just personality conflicts. We're talking about deep, difficult dysfunction, situations where there has been abuse in the past. There may be domestic abuse going on between some members of the family in the present. Jacob, I'll turn to you first. If if you are a member of a family where there are some of these deeper, more difficult issues, what are some of the things that you need to think about when you're approaching what could be a very stressful family gathering?
I think two important things are always to consider are emotional and physical safety. If you're going to put yourself or your other family members in a potentially dangerous situation, whether that may be emotionally or physically, it's going to be important to, as we've talked about before, think about that beforehand. And there may be some cases where it may just be better not to go to that situation. If you're worried that if you're going to bring a child into an area where there's going to be violence or any of those types of things, it might be better just to avoid that altogether. And at the same time, as I mentioned before, especially when dealing with a history of abuse and violence, it's important to seek help. If you are currently a victim of abuse, it's important to reach out and seek help and to get out of that situation and find resources and support to be able to move away from that. Those are serious issues, and if you aren't currently getting help, I would strongly recommend that you do.
Lauren, do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
Yes, I think, again, I like the word that one of the guests used earlier about a cameo appearance. I think, things just aren't going to be a lot different in terms of the family dynamics because it's a holiday. So I think brief involvement, if any involvement, when you know that the situation is sort of dangerous. There's one other thing I'd like to bring up, Charity, and that mm-hmm. we haven't talked about, and that is how do we deal with grief and bereavement during the holidays when one of the major chairs at the table is going to be empty?
Sure.
And I think that question comes up often for us who are doing therapy prior to the holidays, and people just sort of dreading how to get through that. A few years ago, I was going through a difficult situation because of loss, and the church that I go to has a Blue Christmas service, and I think that was very helpful to me at the time to know that there are other people who, for whom the holiday is really changed because of the way things have been experienced.
Let's define this service a little bit. A Blue Christmas service. So the idea was to bring together people who would be mourning during the holiday season?
It was just for people who were experiencing loss. And it was a group of people who weren't going to be singing Joy to the World, in that sense. But to recognize that for them, the holiday had changed for this year, and how do you get through that? And then I think, just the emotional support of being with other people who were there to give you hugs and to make you not avoid the loss, because you can't, but to allow you to focus on your grief for a while, but then to kind of put it aside for a while so that you can refocus yourself on some of the happiness and joys that come along.
I want to return to this idea of entering a difficult family dynamic with you, Steve. And there are so many ways that all of these subjects are intertwined, because, of course, loss can be a very big part of this as well. But, Steve, often people who have substance abuse problems have also experienced trauma in their past, and there can be a lot of difficult family dynamics that go back a long way in someone's life. With someone who is trying to recover, how do you help prepare them for some of those issues as well?
Well, again, I want to preface this response by saying that in the addictions field, one of the things that we often are aware of is that a person's alcohol or drug use really is often symptomatic to some other underlying issues. So, in a family setting, when you have either the individual who is in recovery or other family members that may be using alcohol or other drugs, one of the things that we know about alcohol, for example, is that one of the first areas of the brain that's affected is judgment. And it can remove inhibitions and really open the door for things being exchanged or said that really can be unhealthy and destructive. So again, strategizing with someone who is deemed at risk or early in their recovery, they may really have to make a decision prior to going in whether or not it's in their best interest regarding their recovery, whether they want to even be a part of that. Let's understand, too, that alcohol use, for example, is part of our culture in many, many ways. It's part of the holidays. It's associated with the holidays in so many ways. Not all families abuse alcohol or drugs. There are certain families and certain dynamics that adding alcohol or other drug use to that situation can really fuel the fire. So I think it's really about the individual focusing on what they can do differently to prepare themselves or reduce or limit their risk when they're engaging with people that they care about and are connected to emotionally. And I think Jake and Dr. Olson have made some great points about some of those underlying issues.
You're welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Lauren, you were you mentioned earlier today that we're not always rational. And Steve was talking about about the fact that, you know, when you add alcohol into a situation, we're not going to make our best decisions. But we're not necessarily rational creatures, even without alcohol, especially this time of year, right?
Well, we think we are. We presume that we operate with rational thought most of the time, but we're really driven by, in large measure, by what goes on in a part of our brain called the limbic system. And the limbic system contains the center for pleasure, but it also contains the centers for anxiety and fear and flight and memories that are registered in terms of our senses, not thought memories that are well formed. But that's why we, for example, when I smell my grandma's Christmas cookies, it takes me back immediately to that time in my life because it stirs up those memories. So that can trigger both good and bad things. And traditions are often designed to enhance those experiences.
We have a couple of callers on the line. I want to get back to the phones. Jody is on the line in Johnston. Hi, Jody.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Just something that I don't think a lot of light gets shed on. And for women especially, and me included, I've experienced a miscarriage and I'm dealing with infertility. And to have to go to a holiday gathering with family members and everyone is expecting, you know, a newly married couple to be sharing news of a pregnancy. And I feel like that's something that not many people focus on or bring attention to. And it's a very big deal for me and other women like me, I guess.
Sure, that could be remarkably painful. And
especially when you have a mother who is breathing down your neck to bring her a grandchild.
Well, and people say things, I'm sure, that are well-intentioned, but are are
exactly
very insensitive.
But it's not something you share, and, you know, like we're going to the doctor and having all these fertility tests, and it's something very personal, but then people feel the need to pry about it, and it's a very hard thing to share with your family.
Jacob or Lauren, do either one of you have something you'd...
Well, I've certainly heard this from a number of women who've been in your situation, and it is painful. Even just the sight of somebody who is introducing a new baby to the family can stir up a lot of feelings. I think it might be worth having a conversation with someone in the family who's an ally, and that they can help you divert the conversation. It may be too difficult for you to address those questions, but if you have someone else there who can change the subject for you, but I think, you know, you don't have to share everything about it, but it can be a real source of grief in knowing that you're trying so hard to do this and you haven't been successful. But it's not the time to confront the issue. If it's someone you're close to, if you can talk to your mother about it, or grandma, or is it your mother-in-law,
My own mother.
Your own mother. Maybe you can have a one-on-one conversation with her and tell her, you know, that this has been very difficult because I'm trying to get pregnant and it's not working and it's very painful to talk about it.
I think she has her own issues. She's very narcissistic and everything is about her. So it's been a very difficult year, we'll say, trying to discuss things with her, even in one-on-one.
Okay. Okay, well then, if you can engage another ally who can change the subject for you and get away from it, and but it's certainly not the time to talk about it publicly.
Oh, Jody, thank you so much for your call, and I hope things go well, you know, in all aspects for you. The I think that's probably a lesson we should all take to heart is don't ask. Don't ask those questions, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
That is actually rude. All right. Jamie is on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Jamie.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes. What would you like to talk about?
I just wanted to – I noticed that at least one of the people on your panel is an addictions counselor. Mm-hmm. My son has – he's 22. He's been – in the Twin Cities and in the sober community there for 3 years. And he's actually working as an addiction intake counselor right now. But he has mentioned to us that a number of people that he's known in the community are relapsing. And they're, you know, almost kind of started with Halloween. And is, you know, he's had probably two or three people that he's been fairly close to relapse, one in a particularly bad way. And I was wondering, is there something that happens with, I mean, is it the fact that the days get shorter? Is there something that happens this time of year for people who have been sober for a very long time that something kind of clicks in and causes a relapse at this time of year? I mean, why is this time of year a particularly vulnerable time?
Well, Steve is nodding his head, Jamie. So, Steve?
Yeah, Jamie, that's a really an interesting statement. And I want to first congratulate your son on his recovery and his continued work towards that. But I think, and I was mentioning this to Jacob prior to the broadcast today, and we were talking about one of the issues that we see with our clients at our agency is we begin talking about the holidays and relapse potential and relapse risks right around Halloween, particularly that sort of sets in motion. There may be some seasonal correlations there. I don't have any specific data to offer to support that, but clearly there's a lot at play here. Family, cultural expectations. It's in the media everywhere. You know, alcohol, that idea to celebrate and to engage and cut loose. All of those expectations can really put pressure on someone who is committed to making lifestyle changes. Remember, recovery is not about not using alcohol or other drugs. It's what you do after you stop using alcohol and other drugs. Part of that may be redefining how you engage with and connect with people around you, including family, during the holidays. We can't choose our family. We can choose our friends, but our family is our family. But I appreciate the question, Jamie. I don't know if I answered your question, but
Charity, can I interject here?
Yeah, sure.
You know, one of the things that I've seen in working with people in recovery as well is that when someone you're close to who's also in recovery relapses, it can be very threatening to think, you know, how easy it is to get out of the recovery mode. And so it's probably that he's feeling somewhat threatened about his own recovery, and it's a time now to really support him in that.
Well, we are out of time. Jamie, thank you so much for your phone call, and happy holidays to you. Pardon me. And also, Steve Steine, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Charity.
Steve Steine is a certified addictions counselor and clinical manager for the outpatient department at MECCA, a community-based substance abuse treatment organization. Dr. Lauren Olson, thank you so much.
Thank you for being here.
Dr. Lauren Olson is a psychiatrist at United Community Services in Des Moines. And Jacob Priest, thank you.
Thank you.
Jacob Priest is a visiting assistant professor in the Couple and Family Therapy program at the University of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Sarah Bowden, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical support today from John Pemble. Coming up on Monday, I'll be visiting with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. This is Talk of Iowa.